south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, just a quick update on my Latin American seminar for January 2014. I'm 3/4 filled now, which means I still have a few spots left. So just go to expatwisdom.com, click on the Latin American seminar link on the left top of the page for full details. We're still about 2 months from showtime, so there's plenty of time to put your plans together. You won't be disappointed, I promise you that. Now, since we're hitting the holiday season, I often get asked by visiting tourists and in emails too, if we expats don't truly miss the great family-style get-togethers that happen around Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's, especially those big North American-style traditional shindigs with the turkey dinner and all those fixins that you just can't get down in Latin America, like pumpkin pie and cranberries, you know, all those traditional little extras. And it's true, when I first came down here over 20 years ago, I'll tell you how hard it was to get a real Thanksgiving dinner. I mean real, with all the fixins. Now, you might remember I said in a past show that every single Latin American town over about 50,000 people has a gringo hangout, usually a bar, often named in honor of the gringo who opened it, like Mike's Place, or with some obvious all-American title that everybody gets, like the Harley Davidson Bar or the Beetle Bar, you know, something any gringo can instantly connect with. And back then, a couple of decades ago, these little American gringo bars were practically the only place in town you could get a Thanksgiving or Christmas or New Year's dinner, as close as possible as to what your mama used to make up in the States. In fact, all these little gringo bars would advertise weeks in advance for that big, upcoming, all-you-can-eat Thanksgiving dinner for 10 or 12 bucks. In fact, in most of these gringo joints, you'd have to put your name on the list so the owner could work out the amounts of specialty food items they'd have to locate. And since there were some items you just couldn't get down here for love or money, like cherry pie filling, bags of seasoned croutons for turkey stuffing, cranberries, pumpkin pie filling, etc. So, how'd they locate that stuff? Easy. Well, not so easy, actually. Friends and relatives coming in and out of the country would be recruited to bring some of that stuff with them back from the States, as much as the suitcase weight limits would allow, anyway. And the owner of the bar, being a gringo or gringa, would spend weeks leading up to Thanksgiving, organizing that inventory. Oh, and here's another thing a lot of us long-term expats remember from way back then. In large Latin American supermarkets, every once in a while by hook and crook, you'd see a couple of real American products on the shelves. Pumpkin or mincemeat pie filling, for example. And believe me, when you saw something like that on the shelf, if you didn't buy up every single one of them, the next expat who passed by probably would. Since, almost always, back then, those oddball North American products that just aren't on the Latin menu, for example, cranberries and cherry pie filling, would certainly have been a one-off deal. And once those 24 cans were gone, they wouldn't reappear on the shelves for 8 or 10 months, or maybe never. You couldn't procrastinate. You had to make your move. And as Murphy's Law would have it, those scarce American treats like that always came off-season, like in May or June. Go figure, right? In fact, one day about 15 years ago, when expat Eddie first came down, I remember going into his kitchen and seeing about 50 jars of Ragu spaghetti sauce stacked in a corner. Now, I'd never seen Ragu spaghetti sauce in Latin America. Not back then. And until then, Eddie didn't either. And that's when he told me he just happened to stumble into one of the big Salvador grocery stores when some stock boy cracked open a new pallet. And there they were, like nuggets of gold. 50 sparkling glass jars of Ragu spaghetti sauce. And Eddie bought every one of them, and every day after that for the next 6 months proceeded to have something with Ragu sauce on it. Anyway, like I said, 10, 15, 20 years ago, the only place you could get a real, or kind of real, Thanksgiving, Christmas, or New Year's dinner was at one of those expat gringo bar holiday parties. And you know, for those couple times a year when they'd have those 100% gringo events, even expats like me, who preferred to stay away from mixing with gringos at gringo bars like that, actually would give in and join the celebration. Because if you did have a craving for a nice big traditional Thanksgiving dinner, for example, you'd never be able to put that thing together on your own. But that was then. Now that Walmart and Costco have landed throughout Latin America, with over 4,000 Walmart stores alone, you can walk into any one of those places right now and get all those special fixins. What used to be rare and special, well, it's everywhere now. On top of that, in the last 5 years, all the big transnational and international hotels, like, for example, the Radisson, the Clarion, the Camino Real, even Holiday Inn and Howard Johnson's, they advertise in the paper a couple of days before each holiday, like Thanksgiving, that they too are having a complete American-style traditional dinner. Turkey, ham, and all the fixings. For usually around $20. So don't worry, if you have those holiday cravings, they're easily satisfied. Oh, and there's another way to get one of those nice American-style holiday dinners, too. If you're in a tourist town or on the tourist trail, you can always find a chapter of Democrats Abroad or Republicans Abroad. And they always throw a big shindig like that for Thanksgiving, Christmas, and New Year's. However, if you're like me, just a thought of walking into the Republicans or Democrats Abroad would not make you want to eat, but make you want to vomit. And speaking of Democrats and Republicans Abroad, I don't get it. If you're a person who's so enamored with your twisted political machine, whatever it is, why in the hell did you ever leave Big Brother land in the first place? I just can't believe anyone who comes down here and becomes an expat would be stupid enough to join a group like that. I mean, isn't that what we're trying to get away from? Well, the other day I kind of answered that question for myself. I actually ran into a card-carrying member of Republicans Abroad. And it could have been Democrats Abroad, too, or Imbeciles Abroad. Same thing, right? And when I asked him a bit about the membership, you know what he told me? Which I pretty much suspected already. He said, the vast majority of the members are either attached to the embassy, are military attachés or personnel attached to the embassy, are government contractors attached to the embassy, who are receiving contracts out of the embassy, and civilian contractors attached to the military contractors who are attached to the embassy. Talk about political incest. It's almost as if these government slugs, once away from home like that, have to affiliate with the Democrats or Republicans or get ostracized somehow. I don't know and I don't care. That's why I keep far, far away from drones like that. And I recommend that you do too. Oh, and one last thing. If you didn't know, turkeys are native to Latin America. And they don't have gigantic turkey factories like they do in the States, where turkeys live their whole miserable lives packed elbow to asshole. Here, turkeys have their space. And most of them are pretty much free range. Now, up in the States, you'd have to pay triple for a turkey like that. And down here, they all have breathing space. That's just the way it is. So if you're into turkey meat, you can't do better than a turkey from your local Latin farmer. And if you're not a meat eater, Expat Eddie's got a couple of jars of ragu a bit past their expiration date. But what's in a number? Now, changing gears a bit, sometimes being an engineer, in my past life anyway, causes me a bit of anxiety and stress when I'm down here in Latin America since I see so many public projects like roads and bridges done badly, half-ass, or even crappy enough to be called dangerous to the public. And because of the inefficient, lazy, slug-ass government folks and the corruption and the graft and the cronyism that go along with each public project, like the construction of an overpass or a turnpike, for example, nothing regarding public works projects ever seems to change. The fact is, I'm always shocked what they get away with. Not to mention the fact that at least in 80% of the cases, when the job is finished and the sign goes up that says, "Thanks for putting up with the BS, we're finished now." In the first world, the job wouldn't be finished. It just never would have passed inspection. And by the way, when you see road crews in Latin America, you almost always see a sign that says, "This roadwork is courtesy of so-and-so mayor of this municipality," as if he's digging into his own pocket to pay for it. It's a case of pure illegal electioneering, but no one does a thing about it, so they keep getting away with it. Even nuttier, you'll see a road crew working with a sign next to it that says, "Here's another example of your government working for you." But what the sign really should be saying is something like this: "We're finally here to fix this intersection that was designed badly. And now, after 4 years, dozens of accidents and 6 deaths, we're here to do it right. This time we'll try to stick closer to the plan and won't skimp too much on the asphalt." Not too much. Now, of course, you'd never see a sign like that, but it would be telling it like it is. Now, to give you a concrete example, pun intended, of how corrupt, twisted, and basically loony the whole Latin American road construction process can be, let me ask you this question. What would you say that if in a large town near you, up in the States, in the most expensive luxury hotel, there was an international asphalt conference going on? Yeah, I said asphalt. You know, that smelly black stuff on the highway that's been around for maybe 100 years and whose composition hasn't changed in that long either. Now I ask you, why would you need a 3-day asphalt convention at a 4-star, $200 a night hotel? And who would go to such a dead, boring thing like that? Why, of course, it's a place for all the world's greatest asphalt minds to gather. to discuss all the amazing 21st century earth-shattering asphalt breakthroughs, of course. Now again, I ask you, if you were to see an event like that at your local Hilton Hotel, you'd probably think it was a joke, some kind of misprint. But down here in Latin America, these things go on all the time. And who sponsors them? Why, government and all the big asphalt contractors, of course, since these places are where all the backroom side deals are made for the upcoming projects. And just to give you another concrete example, sorry about that, I'm looking at a full-color magazine ad now that says, and I'm not kidding here, it says in huge letters, in Spanish of course, surprising, inspiring, get involved yourself, of the 13th Annual Asphalt Congress of Latin America, November 17th through 22nd. And of course, it doesn't surprise me that it's being held at the most expensive luxury hotel in all of Central America. And what's even more stupefying is that this thing lasts for a whole week. Now, being an engineer myself, if I was in charge of this conference, the presentation would last about 3 minutes, and this is what I'd say to these guys. Okay, all you thick-headed, corrupt morons, buy yourself a $2 tape measure and use it to make sure that your asphalt cap is always 4 inches, never less. And why is that? Well, that's because it's the international thickness standard for asphalt on highways. And because anything that's less than 4 inches becomes the number one reason for premature deterioration and breakage. But you know what? If I was to say that, all hands would go up with one question in mind. They'd say, but Johnny, if we followed international norms, how are we supposed to make any money? Changing gears a bit, you might remember a few shows ago, I read an email from a lonely, nerdy gringo who's going to come down to Latin America as a last-ditch effort looking for love. And after that, I got a lot of emails sympathetic to the guy's plight. And if you don't quite remember that email, he signed it, not fat, not ugly, not perverted, just nerdy. So now, continuing on a similar social theme, I'd like to talk about something else I bet you never heard discussed before. In the first world, in a dating, mating, or marriage relationship, us first worlders have pet names for our loved ones. You know, terms of endearment. Some of them pretty common, like sweetheart or honey or baby, for example. You know what I mean. Of course, that's true too down here in Latin America, only multiply that by about 100. Now, down here in Latin America, it's mostly the woman who uses specific terms of endearment for her significant other. For example, the most common one is cariño, which means lover, or my love. And half the time, Latins will preface a term of endearment with the word mi, M-I, like mi cariño, which means my love. But more often than not, Latins will just skip that part and leave the mi off and say just cariño, which still means my love. In that case, the my part is inferred. Though don't be too concerned about that, but the following is important. All you expat guys and gals who expect someday to hook up with a Latin significant other, these are the little terms of endearment you're going to hear over and over and over again. But what's different about terms of endearment in Latin America is that if you translated the same terms into English, you could never get away with that up north. And if you tried, your significant other would not be significant for long. In fact, you'd likely get a slap in the face. But I'm getting ahead of myself, and I'll get back to that in a minute. So anyway, here's just one quirky thing about Latins and their terms of endearment. A term of endearment will often refer to one of your physical attributes. For example, a guy will call his girlfriend mi morenita, which means my little tan or dark-skinned girl. Or a guy might address his girlfriend as mi chica dorada, which means my golden girl. Of course, referring to the color of her skin. And if a Latin woman has a significant other who's brown or tan-skinned too, kind of halfway between white and black. That color called morena in Spanish for a woman and moreno in Spanish for a man. Anyway, the woman will call her man mi morenito with an O at the end of any word referring to a man and an A referring to a woman. Because remember, down here, words have genders. But forget about that for a second. And let me go through this list of terms of endearment. And I know you'll find it amusing because, like I said before, you could never get away with this stuff up in the States. Okay, so if your woman or man is really dark, like black, a woman might call her man mi negrito. And if the woman's very dark, the man will call her mi negrita. It's that O and A after the word gender thing again. But don't let that throw you. And I think you know that the word negro in Spanish is black. If you like wine, you probably picked up Gato Negro wine from Chile, which means black cat. Now, admittedly, Gato Negro wine kind of sucks, but I digress as usual. So anyway, in Latin America, you'll hear a lot of couples tossing around that mi negrito, mi negrita thing. Now, of course, up in the States, you could never get away with that except in the ghetto. Because, as you know, up north, all that can be a very touchy subject. Now, in a past show, I mentioned that the N-word and the use of the N-word does not exist down here in Latin America. Black folks are just called negritos. That's it. There is no insulting or pejorative term. Though, as you well know, it depends how you say it, too, right? However, with indigenous Latin Americans, there does exist a version of the N-word that's just as insulting to them. For example, if you want to insult a native Latin American, which I never suggest, by the way, because remember, these guys know how to use a machete. The ladies, too. But just hypothetically, if you want to insult an indigenous person, just call him an Indio or an Indian to his or her face. Those are pejoratives, and they much prefer the term indigenous. You longtime listeners knew that already, right? But let's get back to our terms of endearment. Now, this one I liked, and I mentioned it a long time ago. And it's one of the most commonly used ones, too. Go figure. Now, if a Latin guy or gal is fat, which, by the way, is generally the case these days, thanks to the influx of cheap junk food, but you knew that, too. And the word fat, referring to a person, not the oil, grease, or fat in foods, in Spanish is gordo or gorda for a woman. Then the term of endearment is mi gordito for a guy and mi gordita for a woman. In other words, your wife, husband, boyfriend, or girlfriend just called you my little fatty. Now I ask you, how many North American women would take that from a guy for more than a millisecond? Worse yet, the word for pig is cerdo in Spanish. So if you're a fat guy, your wife might call you mi gordito, but she also might call you my cerdito, which means my little piggy. Or a guy might call his fat wife or girlfriend mi cerdita, which means my fat little pig. Not a very good conversation starter up in Cleveland, I might say. Yep, they're both huge insults up in the States, but terms of endearment down here. Now, if a girl has light-colored or blonde hair, it's called cancha, and her significant other will call her canchita. In fact, it's actually a name down here. A lot of women are just called, plainly, canchita, which literally means my little light-haired one. And if someone's as skinny as a bone, and since bones are called huesos down here, then the term of endearment is mi huesito for a guy and mi huesita for a woman, which you could never get away with in English. You couldn't say to your woman, what would you like to do tonight, my little bone? Or worse yet, a woman referring to her man as my little bone. Up in the States, a woman could say that, but only behind closed doors. Talk about ego-shattering insults, right? And here's a few more common terms of endearment. Like, for example, mi luna, which means my moon, or mi vida, which means my life, or mi aire, which means my air, or mi chocolate, which means my chocolate. Not hard to pick up on that one, right? Or mi alegría, which means my happy one. Or mi princesa, which means my princess. Or mi reina, which means my queen. Or mi mujercita, which means my little woman. Or mi pichoncito, which means my little baby bird. Or mi tortuguita, which means my little turtle. And all of those terms are innocent pet names that Latins use for each other. But there are some that you just could never get away with up in the first world. And I named a few, but here are some more. And even though the following terms are used all the time down here by lovey-dovey couples, don't try this up in the States, or you're sure to get a slap or end up in the doghouse. For example, if a woman has a big butt, and the crude word for butt down here is culo, like in the Italian language too. Anyway, the term of endearment for that is mi culona, which means my fat-ass girlfriend, wife, or significant other. Yes, up north you could get a kick in the balls for that, but down here it's a term of endearment. And if your significant other has a big belly, the term of endearment for that is mi panzón or mi panzoncito, which means my fat-bellied husband, wife, girlfriend, or significant other. Now, here's a term of endearment I've never quite figured out. Mi gusanito. Now, a gusano in Spanish is a worm. So when you hear a guy or gal referring to his significant other as a gusanito, in our part of the world, that would be a huge insult. You little worm. Admit it, no matter how nice you say it, it comes out pretty crass. But here, a term of endearment. And of course, you've seen movies in the States that take place in the Latin ghettos, L.A., New York, Chicago, or wherever, and you hear the street slang word cabron and cabrona all the time. And normally, In the Latin culture, if you say it to someone you don't know, it's an insult meaning coward or bastard or jerk. And when you say it to your friends, it means buddy or dude. Expat Eddie explains it like this. He says, it's like saying to a good buddy of yours you just ran into, hey, head, how's it going? And you know you can only get away with that with your best buddies. If you say it to someone you don't know, them's fighting words, right? However, if you call your significant other, mi cabrona or mi cabrón, there you go. It's a term of endearment again. And finally, down here in Latin America, if you have a significant other who's a bit of a slob or a sloppy, messy eater, kind of like Pig Pen in the Charlie Brown comic strip, well, the term of endearment for that is mi porquito or mi porquita for a woman. And where did that word come from? Pork, as in Porky Pig, no less. Now, I wonder how far you'll get with your girlfriend if you call her Porky up in the first world. I hardly think romance will be on the menu that night. Now, one of the weirdest terms of endearment of all is this one. Mi Teletubby. Now, listen to that again. Mi Teletubby. Now, of course, 99.9% of you guys will have no idea what that word is, and I didn't either. I heard it dozens of times and didn't know what it was at all until I saw it spelled out. Then I finally got it. And guess what it spells? Those old passé kids' cartoons, Teletubbies. Remember those? Teletubbies? Though they're dead up in the States, they're still in heavy reruns down here due to lag time, in Spanish, of course. So, because of their round, cushy, squeezable, lovable shapes, yes, they're now a term of endearment. So, down here, calling someone a Teletubby just might get you to second base. Who knows? Go figure. And yes, as for me, I've been called a lot of things in my life, but never a Teletubby, though I suppose it's only a matter of time. So anyway, you expat guys and gals, gonna-bes and wannabes, get ready for all that and the onslaught of pet names, too. Because believe me, if you get involved with a Latin person, you can't avoid it. Get used to it. Though I admit, guys especially, you'll never get used to being called a little bone or little worm in public. And yes, public or private, your significant other will use the same terms of endearment, so you'll have to get used to that too. So all you little worms out there, take note. And though the object is to learn as much Spanish as you can, of course, you'll find the more you learn, the more embarrassing certain things can get. Again, like expat Eddie says, it was all good and well when his Spanish sucked, and his girlfriend's pet name for him was Narizón. But when he found out later it meant big nose, he had kind of a hard time dealing with it. Sure, he knows he's got a classic honker, but it's a lot different having your girlfriend remind you about it 10 times a day. Now, said about that, let's change gears again. Now, you know I've mentioned before that do-gooder gringos in first world governments are always donating stuff down here to the third world. And I've also mentioned that maybe only about 20% of what they donate actually gets to the people. The rest gets skimmed off by middlemen, government intermediaries, or just plain stolen. And that just keeps going on. I see it all the time, and I see the happy eyes of the do-gooder gringos that come down here for a week or two, thinking they've done their great deed for humanity, only to see what they've done crash or burn some months later. I see the crash, but they don't. They're back up at church in Cleveland singing in the choir again. Now, I'm talking about massive fraud and misdirection in humanitarian aid. But what about stupid first world governments that actually sell or give away arms to third world countries? Which is about one of the stupidest things in the world a government could do. And the US does it all the time. It's a nice balance, huh? 20,000 sacks of rice along with 10,000 Berettas. I tell you, I just don't get it. But I don't get a lot of things, so I'm not going to let that worry me. Anyway, if there's anything more stupid than a first world government giving away military hardware or giving anything to another third world country, it's when third world countries, whose own people are starving to death, give away freebies to other poor third world countries whose population is also starving. Now that's completely beyond understanding. Now get this article that's been all over the Latin American press lately. It says here, the Indian ambassador to Guatemala, that's India, his name is Subhatara Bhattachary, has just announced a donation of solar panels made in India worth an estimated $1 million. That's 1 million. Now, it blows my mind that a country like India, who, if you look up the statistics, has 26 times the number of desperately poor people than the country of Guatemala. That's 26 times as many desperately starving people, according to the UN. So what the hell are they doing giving away $1 million in free solar panels to Guatemala for. Man, I tell you, every government just deserves to be wiped off the face of the earth, don't they? Well, actually, I take that back. Who was it that said that people get the government they deserve? I think it was Thomas Jefferson or Ayn Rand or somebody. But I know that H.L. Mencken said it best. He said, people deserve the government they get, and they deserve to get it good and hard. Now, I have to mention that Indian solar panel donation to Guatemala is not the end of it. Turns out, they're doing the same thing with Honduras and Nicaragua and Salvador. And you have to wonder, who's the idiot in the Indian government that's behind all that? Whoever he is, with brain power like that, he'd be a shoo-in for Congress in the States, wouldn't he? And now I'd like to address some email questions I've been getting about smart meters. People want to know if they have smart meters in Latin America. Since we all know up in the first world, the conversion to 100% smart meters is well on its way. And I'm sure all of you know that once a smart meter is in place, the utility company and the government they send their data to know just about everything you're doing in the house. For one thing, they know when you're home based on your usage, and they know when and how long you use your various appliances. So whether you agree with that or not, which I don't, specifically the bit about them knowing when you're home or not. Now, that obviously leaves you vulnerable to burglaries and such, since anyone who gets a hold of your information will know when you're not home. So if you liked smart meters before, just think about that one for a while. However, if you trust your government, you won't worry. So do they have smart meters in Latin America? Well, the answer is yes. In all the latest, greatest, newest subdivisions and brand new malls and commercial centers, they are installing smart meters, which means about 0.01% of Latin America is wired with a smart meter. And how long will it take them to wire the rest? I'll bet you a Bitcoin, 50 years at least. In fact, I know a guy who works at the utility company down here, and he told me there are more people stealing electricity in just the country of Honduras than there are total smart meters installed in all of Latin America. And when I mentioned my concerns about smart meters in general, he just laughed and rolled his eyes and he said, yeah, sure, we're installing them all right because that's what we're supplied with, but they're really stupid meters because we have no way to monitor all the information that comes from those things like you do up in the first world. We're installing the meters, but we're not installing the associated computers and networks to catalog and document all that information. That's phase two, and that should come in about 5 years, he said. And then he winked and said, you know, we'll get the hardware, but we'll never use it.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos.
She was a picture.